Okay, go ahead.
I was born in Windhoek. I'm the second child of three, but I grew up in the southern parts of Namibia. My parents are from the southern parts. When my parents divorced when I was about 8 years old, my mom moved with us, with the kids, back to Windhoek. So this is where I did my schooling, most of my schooling. My childhood was quite a privileged childhood. I finished school in about 1986, and then the following year I went to the US to study. But around that time was really when things were getting quite hot in Namibia. The student uprisings were starting around 1987. When that is when the South African colonial regime intensified its operations, and particularly how NANSO was formed, was that at a school in a lot of the schools in the northern part of the country, where that was really where the war zone was. The South Africans were constructing military camps right next to the secondary schools. I don't know if it was their way of making sure that there's no interaction between the students and the plan fighters. But also there was heavy military presence in the schools where military personnel would be teaching students in the secondary schools. And South Africa was using schools as a front for their military operations. And at Bonhoeffe Secondary School in the north, there was some military exchange between plan fighters and the South African Defence Force. And because this military camp was right next to the school, a lot of the students got involved in that, and a lot of innocent school children were shot dead. And this led to students in the northern parts of the country protesting the presence of military camps in schools and also the presence of military personnel within the schools. And these demands sort of spiral to other parts of the country, where it was around that time then that we started mobilizing students in support of the calls of the students in the north. Also, students were saying that we cannot have proper education unless this country is free. That the crisis in education is linked to the struggle for liberation. And so students started demanding for the implementation of Resolution 435 and the departure of the South African military. Also, this was also the time that NUNW, the National Union of Namibian Workers, started mobilizing workers in support of Resolution 435. So from all fronts, really, the South Africans were getting a lot of pressure to leave the country. The Council of Churches was also one front. A lot of the support that the students were getting and that NUNW was getting was coming through the Council of Churches. So this is really, without planning, how a lot of students became involved in the struggle, merely because there was so much pressure on the South African regime that students somehow, you know, also became part of that. And a lot of students who were innocent would be shot, or if there is any protests or whatever, they did not discriminate. The South Africans did not discriminate. They would just shoot at random. And even if you were not a political activist, somehow you started asking questions, but why are they shooting innocent people? And, you know, by asking those questions, a lot of the students got involved. In the turning point really was in 1998 with the Kasinga massacre, that the students held a protest. They held a protest march. We marched from Kadutura, and we were planning to march into the city to show our support for Resolution 435 and you know, just protesting the massacre that took place. And we were stopped at the police station in Kadutura by Kufut, by the South African Defence Force. And we were met by rubber bullets and forced to move back into Kadutura. A lot of students were also wounded and rushed to hospital. And this is when the South Africans now started targeting student leaders to see, you know, which were the people that were really behind these marches. But also what happened was that in, I think it was around June of 1988, the NUNW, the Workers' Union, and the Council of Churches organized a national stay away of the workers, all the workers all over the country, in support of student demands. Because students were saying there's an educational crisis, students were saying we want Resolution 435, students were saying what happened at Kasinga, why is it that so many lives were lost at Kasinga. So all these questions were being asked, and you know, it was the workers and the students and NANTU. That is also how NANTU was formed. Actually, the student union was the catalyst for the formation of NANTU, which is the teachers' union. Because the students were saying, we need the support of the teachers also if we want to fight these guys. So we had a very successful national stay away, and this is what also made international headlines, that students were at the forefront of demanding for independence. Around this time also, a lot of students fled the country to the SWAPO camps in Angola and in Zambia and so on. This is also how, sadly, we lost many of the students like Achap Hendricks, who were detained by SWAPO when they arrived there. SWAPO was saying, who are these people that are coming in now? And so they, again, a lot of students and a lot of people who fled around that time were detained by SWAPO. When they came to SWAPO for help, they were detained by SWAPO and put into camps and called spies. That is another part of Namibia's sad history, that people who fled to SWAPO from the South Africans were detained by SWAPO and called spies. But anyway, that is how I became involved. In 1987, it's when I left, and then I just decided immediately to come back because I wanted to be part of this process. I can't even remember when it was that I was elected as the Secretary General of NANSO. This was just at the turn of independence when was independence? 1990, I think. But really, yeah, that was my involvement. We were saying that we need change in the country. In that 1 year that I was in the US, I was exposed to, for the first time, to socialist thinking. When I was reading about Marxism, I was inspired by this because, you know, we're looking at collective, you know, doing things in a collective way and the power that workers can have, you know, was learning about these ideologies, and that inspired me also to participate in the country's liberation movement. around 99, just after independence, we were saying now the country is free. We need to reshape the student organization. It is no longer our responsibility to call for political independence. We have that already. Now we have to protect the interests of students. We are a student organization. But because the political environment did not allow us to be a student organization, we first had to fight for a conducive political environment. But now that we have that, we need to now protect the interests of students. So that was really, the whole organization needed to redirect itself, needed to, you know, look again at what is it that we want to achieve. Because we have achieved political independence. Now we need to look at the education system and how we can protect the interests of students within the education system. So in 1988, we took a resolution to affiliate to SWAPO in order to, you know, strengthen SWAPO and in order to rally students to vote for SWAPO, because it was very important to us that SWAPO comes into power. And so the whole election process, Nanso was at the forefront of that. Nanso was, you know, teaching people, workers, students, those who were of voting age, we were teaching them how to vote. So we traveled this whole country just saying, you know, how you must make your cross and how you must make sure that the ballot is not spoiled and, you know, the whole election sort of what was required, we were involved in that.
Okay, you were at the point where... Oh, it was just reorganizing.
Yeah, the organization was reorganizing itself. In 1988, I think it was 88, I can't remember. We took a resolution at the Nanso Congress to affiliate to SWAPO. And this was really a strategic move to make sure that students vote for SWAPO so that we can get political independence. But after that, after political independence, we were saying now we have to disaffiliate from SWAPO because SWAPO is now in government and we need to be an independent body from SWAPO in order to that, so that we are able to confront SWAPO if it's necessary. We should be removed far enough so that we can be critical, that we can say we don't like this in the education system, or, you know, we have to negotiate with SWAPO now. We cannot sit with them in the same camp. Sort of that was sort of the thinking. You cannot be the player and the referee at the same time, you know. This caused a split within Nanso, because now those of us who were saying that we need to disaffiliate were now being called spies again. That, you know, we are not loyal enough to SWAPO, or we have a hidden agenda. The South Africans are still somehow influencing what is happening and so on. So a lot of us were again labeled as spies, and this split really, I think, the country was not ready for that kind of thing, because everything was still too raw. And I think some of us, we were trying to look ahead and trying to see where does a student organization fit into the whole, you know, picture. But others were saying that, no, we still need to continue, you know, having close ties with SWAPO and so on. And I think it was at this point where many of us sort of started taking the back seat. And I personally, a lot of the leadership in Nanso was being recruited into government positions. I made a personal decision not to go there because I still believed that if I want to make a difference, then I need to be in a position where I can be critical, and if something is wrong, I want to feel free to say it is wrong. I don't agree with it, and I didn't feel that being in a government position would give me that leverage. So I went into the NGO sector, and I wanted to make my contribution to economic independence and social independence by making a difference in the lives of rural communities, by helping them help themselves, by helping them organize themselves so that they can make something better of their lives. And that is really my story. I believed in political independence, that the Namibian people should make decisions about where they want to take their lives, and that foreign rule was not the way to do it. We could not. We need to shape our destiny. I believed in that, and I fought for that, and. I fought for that through my involvement with NANSO, the SWAPO Youth League, NUNW. I also worked for the Workers' Union for about 2 years. When we achieved political independence, I felt that I wanted to make my contribution by helping rural communities who cannot read and write. I had the privilege to be able to read and write, to be able to learn something about facilitating development processes. And I worked in the NGO sector for about 15 years until last year. So that's my little story.
Where did you live in the U.S.?
In Thousand Oaks.
California?
Yeah, in California, just outside Los Angeles.
And how old were you when you returned to Namibia?
I was 17. When I left, I was 16. When I came back, I was 17, and when I came back, I just sort of ended in the streets protesting and making sure that we get rid of South Africa.
And how old were you when you were elected Secretary General of NANSO?
I must have been, how old was I? 19? It was just a year after I came back. First, I was elected as the coordinator for the Women's Committee, because what was happening within NANSO is that all of us were out there in the street protesting. All of us were exposed to the brutality of the regime, but the women were not making decisions. It was the guys that were making decisions within the structures of NANSO. And we as women started talking about this, and we formed what was called the Women's Subcommittee within NANSO, so that women would also have a greater voice within NANSO. And I was first... I was actually the first person to be elected to that position, and then the first woman to be elected as within the national structure as the Secretary General. And then I came here. The Polytechnic at the time was UNAM. So I was elected. It was the first SRC of the university, and I was elected the president of that. Of the SRC. Yeah, during that time, we also organized a huge march. We boycotted classes. because we believed that there was mismanagement within the university and that students were not being taken seriously by the management, by council and so on. And we wanted the president to look into allegations of mismanagement within the university, and I led that march to State House. And the president's response to that march was that was not good. We were basically told to go home. And he didn't see us. He didn't look at our petition. He didn't see us. But we continued, you know, on campus. We continued to galvanize the support of students. The students stayed away from classes. We didn't go back to classes, and we demanded that our grievances be heard before we can actually go back to class. And so the council called a meeting where now they were starting to listen to us. So, yeah, that was one of the bigger, you know, that was also when students started to be represented on the different structures within the university.
You were young. You were confronting soldiers. Were you often scared?
No. No, we weren't scared because we had a mass of thousands and thousands of students behind you. You weren't scared. Would they shoot all of us? You know, you felt strong. You felt invincible. you felt strong. You had, and you believed. You believed in what you were doing.
And Namibia gained its independence 4 years before apartheid fell in South Africa. So you were ahead of the curve.
Yes, yes, we were ahead of the curve. But we also got a lot of inspiration. You know how NANSO was also formed because there were a lot of Namibian students who went to South African universities. And there, the South African students were, the protests were also ongoing there. And so a lot of those students were coming back to Namibia and saying, we need to organize ourselves. This is what's happening in South Africa. We need to do the same in Namibia. And the conditions were just so ripe, you know, to do the same. So we were learning a lot from the South African experience, even though, you know, we were ahead in terms of gaining our right to self-determination. But we were seeing what was happening in South Africa, it was the same as what was happening in Namibia. So it was like our brothers and sisters, you know, that was that very close link between the South African Student Union and the Namibian Student Union. So whatever was happening in Namibia, the South African students were supporting us, so that we could get international, you know, so that we could be on the international map, so that the world could see that both the South African black majority and the Namibian black majority is asking for the same thing. Yeah, so I think because of that solidarity, because of the solidarity that we had with South Africa, that is also what really moved things in Namibia, even though this came much later. But I think the most important thing in those years, just before independence, was solidarity, was how the workers, you know, the parents, the teachers, the students, SWAPO Youth League, you know, at all fronts, people were coming together, all these different structures, they needed to work together. And that is what propelled Namibia towards achieving its independence much more faster. And the guys in exile, they were also caught off guard. They didn't know what is going on inside the country because they were fighting the military fight. You know, they were fighting with guns. Inside here, we were just fighting with our voices. And those voices were much, much stronger. The impact of those voices were much stronger than the impact of the guns.
It's a fascinating story.
So, yeah.
You know, Seema, in years to come, people might hear this or other recordings, or they might read your history, and they won't know that you're very petite. You know, you don't look like an imposing figure, and yet you, with your voice, were at the forefront of many of these activities that were going on, standing right in front, leading everyone.
Yeah.
It's just, I just find that interesting, kind of ironic, but telling.
Yeah. No, there were many others who are quiet now, you know, who participated. But I think, you know, a lot of us who were inside the country, who didn't leave the country, I don't think a lot of recognition is given to the contributions that the people who stayed within the country made to the struggle for independence. You had to be in exile in order to have been a real freedom fighter. I think that is generally the perception that one has. But as far as I'm concerned, Namibia wouldn't have gained its independence without the power of that voice. And I think that voice is silent. You know, a lot of people that I know who were with me actually went into the NGO sector and just quietly continued doing, you know, what they are doing.
Well, thank you very much. Really, it's a fascinating story. I appreciate you coming and sharing it.
Yeah.
Okay. Just
it's a small story.
It's an important story. Just for the record at the end here, will you tell us your full name?
Seema Leipert.
Okay.
Mpoi.
Mpoi.
Yes.
And that's your married name?
Yes. But Seema Leipert is my name.
Okay. Thank you very much.